Think globally, eat locally. You've probably heard that new twist on the old 60s slogan. It reflects the growing awareness of the links between big picture concerns like climate change and more immediate concerns like where do we get our food. The boom in local agriculture is one example of this. And here's another, taking advantage of food already growing in cities. It's called urban foraging, and it's starting to move from the margins to the mainstream. For the latest installment of our What's for Lunch series on food and climate change, we sent reporter Joshua McNichols into the wilds of Seattle.
Melanie Voraz Herrera is about to break the law.
What are we looking at?
Nettles. Whole hillside of nettles.
She's harvesting stinging nettles from public property. That's illegal. We're in a neglected corner of Seattle's Golden Gardens Park. The forest floor is littered with beer cans. People pass through here on their way to the beach, just down the hill. But nobody stops here. Nobody except Melanie. And she's after something that almost nobody else would want.
Isn't that amazing? I'm wearing rubber kitchen gloves and getting stung right through them.
But Herrera says stinging nettles are worth suffering for. They're free, they're super healthy, and once you get them back into the kitchen, nettles make great pesto.
That's beautiful.
Foragers like Herrera have always operated in cities, but on the fringes. Sometimes they're even seen as vandals. Melissa Poe is an environmental anthropologist who has studied urban foragers. She says we usually think of parks only as places for recreation.
We go there for picnicking, we might ride a bicycle, or we might just enjoy a walk. Generally speaking, public properties aren't considered areas that are ripe for foraging.
But Poe says attitudes are changing. Los Angeles recently affirmed the right to harvest fruit on public land. Boston, Chicago, and Baltimore have planted public orchards. They're all part of a shift in cities toward preparing for a more uncertain future. Climate change, extreme weather events, rising fuel prices, terrorist activity, they all threaten to disrupt the flow of food into urban areas.
We just had to cut off a major interstate for 2 weeks, and that's an important corridor which moves our food.
And that was just from a truck accident. So local leaders are looking to local resources to increase the resilience of their food supply. That means things like more urban gardens and farms, allowing chickens and small livestock back into the city limits, and foraging.
See right up there against the sky? Those are all figs.
Gail Savina stands under a fig tree on a quiet street in Seattle's Mount Baker neighborhood. The tree's owners are at work. They don't have time to harvest this fruit. Savina estimates there are 100,000 pounds of unharvested fruit on private and public land in Seattle. Last year, her organization City Fruit picked about a fifth of that. Plums, apples, cherries, and pears. The fruit went to local food banks. Savina says that increases the city's resilience. It also helps lower the city's carbon footprint.
When you fly up here from Chile to Seattle, you're going to burn a lot of fuel, and that's going to have a fairly significant impact on the climate. But if you pick the pear down the block, it's not going to have an impact on the climate.
Walk around the block with a forager, and the city starts to look like a grocery store. Lawns are spotted with salad greens, from fiery wild mustards to sweet first-year dandelion greens. A mysterious mushroom in a backyard turns out to be highly prized. Young horsetail and bamboo shoots, invasive garden snails descended from French escargot. Even squirrels are fair game for some foragers. And foraging isn't an isolated activity anymore. It's a communal activity. Many in Seattle's Southeast Asian communities gather each fall to collect chestnuts from Queen Anne Boulevard's stately street trees. And a wildly enthusiastic group has planted a new food forest on public land in the city's Beacon Hill neighborhood. Still, the concern about environmental damage from foraging hasn't gone away. It remains illegal on much city property. Seattle Parks spokesperson Dewey Potter says there's a good reason.
We're engaged in a multi-million dollar effort to restore 2,500 acres of urban forest by the year 2025. And a newly restored area was stripped bare of its native plants by people foraging.
But Seattle's response to a few bad experiences like that has been to engage foragers, not crack down on them. City departments have been asked to consider ways to allow food harvesting and even production on public land. Now, in some Seattle parks, Potter says rangers not only tolerate foraging, they actually teach foraging classes.
Because the more people understand about how the ecosystems work, the more respectful they will be of our parks.
The idea is that educated foragers can help protect public land. For her part, forager Melanie Voras Herrera is careful not to over-harvest her favorite nettle patch.
Doesn't that look good?
Back in her kitchen, she stuffs her stinging nettle pesto into the bellies of trout her husband Carlos caught in a nearby lake. Unlike some here in Seattle, Herrera is no newcomer to foraging. Over dinner, she tells me about her childhood, how she and the rest of her family had to forage for food, how it embarrassed her because it revealed their poverty. But she's rediscovered it as an adult. Now, like Melanie, many cities are also giving foraging a second look. And the result can be good for the climate, good for the cities, and delicious.
That's really good.
For the world, I'm Joshua McNichols, Seattle.
Our What's for Lunch series is part of Food for 9 Billion, a project of Homelands Productions and the Center for Investigative Reporting, in partnership with PBS NewsHour and American Public Media's Marketplace. Joshua's piece got us wondering how many of you might be foraging. Snap a picture of your own foraging adventure on Instagram and use the hashtag What's for Lunch. That's What's, the number 4, Lunch. And be sure to explore the other stories in our series. They're all at theworld.org/What's for Lunch.